the mystery and magic of Channel U Network. Do you know that things aren't as they seem? Are you conscious of their attempted mind control scheme? Are you seeking others to create a team? Are you thirsty to think from a really clear stream? That's why you are here at Channel U. From the mysteries of outer space to spiritual healing, from the depths of the ocean to the heavenly ceiling, to the dreams that reveal your innermost feeling, close your eyes, breathe deep. We are connected to Channel U. From the deserts of the Great Southwest, you're listening to Jerry Wills, Horizon to Horizon on Channel U, Internet Radio.
We're on. Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Wills, and welcome to another edition of Channel U. Like I told you on the last show we had, we're traveling around the country. And this evening I'm coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee, which if some of you are interested in the material by Jim Hertog, The Keys of Enoch, this happens to be one of those places that he calls a time warp area. There's a nice little pyramid or triangle, let's say. It's not a pyramid. Nice little triangle right over the top of Nashville. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but it's supposed to mean, I guess, that we're in a very safe place. So I feel safe enough in telling you that we have a fabulous show for you this evening. With me during this show is going to be a good friend of mine. His name is Robert Stanley. I've known Robert for years and years. It seems like for a lifetime. We've just about run the gamut of all kinds of different subjects during our conversations. Everything from extraterrestrials and UFOs to lost cities. We've had numerous discussions about the secret government and things that go bump in the dark. And we've discussed alternative sources of energy, fuel-saving devices. Seems that we both share quite a litany of like ideas and interests. So it's going to be a real interesting show for you tonight. Here in Nashville, it's cold. It's so cold. Well, I mean, let's face it. I've been living at the equator for a while down in South America. And then, of course, 30 years in Phoenix. So, you know, if it drops below 60, it's time for the sweaters. And that's what I brought. But no coats. So, leave it to me, huh? Fortunately, we're in a nice warm house, so I'm not going to have to be too worried about being frozen out. And speaking of frozen out... How about that information that some of you must have received today? It seems that if any of you decide that you're going to speak out against the government, you're going to protest, you're going to do something that you shouldn't do, well, you're going to be known as a terrorist at that point. And, well, it's going to be just a real sad situation. Talk about being frozen out. What happened to Land of the Free? Home of the Brave? You know, it sounds to me like we're being frozen out of our own country. But who's doing this, really? I mean, is it people within the government? Could these be extraterrestrials that are controlling this planet? Just another step in their domination of this world? I don't know. It's really kind of hard to figure out at times. The worst of it is, I'm not exactly sure why there's so much apathy everyone's pinning their hopes on Ron Paul, and hopefully he'll get the vote. But that's not enough. If people are going to be free, you have to start acting as though it's valuable. Oops, I better be careful. If that bill happens to get passed by the Senate, I could be treading on very thin ice. So I guess I'll stop there because, like everyone listening, I don't want to lose my quote-unquote freedom, now do I? Well, I'll tell you one person afraid to speak out. My God. Did you know that UFOs landed at the Capitol? Now, you probably saw pictures of UFOs in the 50s flying over the White House. But did you know that they also have landed there in recent times? That Washington, D.C. is one of the hotbeds of UFO activity. Well, someone had the impetus to stand up and point at it and say, look at this, and then didn't stop there, but went on a little bit further and said, no, I'm going to research it, and I want you to read this book. Check this out. That person is my friend Robert Stanley. And he's with us right now.
Hey, hi, Jerry.
How you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for the nice introduction there. Wasn't sure where to jump in for you, but yeah, you hit it right on the head. You know, I think a lot of people find it almost impossible to believe that even if they're looking at authentic photographs of UFOs flying over and actually one of them landing on the Capitol, another one was hovering over the reflecting pool. But, you know, just on the face of it, people say, no, that's impossible. It's got to be Photoshop. Well, Photoshop cannot create 35-millimeter negatives, which the photographer obviously has because we've had those authenticated by an independent film lab in Washington, D.C., where he lives and works, and that's how he accidentally caught these things on film late in the night, about 12:30 at night, or I guess that'd be early morning, on July 16, 2002. Now, what's really interesting about this, folks, is that 10 days later, NORAD scrambled jets from which was Andrews Air Force Base. And it made the news because people on the ground were calling in saying that they saw the military jets chasing UFOs over the city.
It actually made it
into Fox News and Washington Post. But what people they said, "Wow, it's the 50-year anniversary of UFOs flying over the Capitol." What they didn't tell anybody was that they'd actually been seen hundreds of times over the Capitol since 1952, July 26. And here's what I only found out recently, which really raised the hairs on the back of my neck. On July 26, 1952, more than one group of jets were sent up to intercept. At that time, at least one of those jets and the pilots disappeared when they were trying to intercept the UFOs. And this was well documented, and it absolutely freaked the guys in the Pentagon out because they were watching the whole thing going down. So when exactly 50 years later they sent NORAD scrambled jets, I think these were National Guard jets from Andrews Air Force Base, you got to know that it was in the back of their minds, especially the seasoned generals in the Pentagon, were hoping to God that another one of their jets would not be disappeared by a close encounter with the UFO over the Capitol.
Well, you're familiar with what happened at Fort Knox in, I think it was 52 or 53.
Yeah, that was Mantell.
He took off chasing after these guys, and they found bits and pieces of his jet. I'm not even sure if they ever found him.
They found him, and his watch was apparently pretty messed up in a strange way. It looked like there was thousands of little pinholes that had been blasted through it. Whether it was, you know, who can say, because he was up way above where he should have been. They claim he ran out of oxygen, but here's the truth of the matter. At that time, we had a standing order to shoot on sight any unidentified object that did not, if it didn't follow the procedures, in other words, even if it was unidentified, if it didn't answer to radio, and there was many, many times when they wouldn't answer at all, then they wouldn't follow procedures, then they were a legitimate target to be fired on. Now, obviously, it's complicated when you're doing that over a city. You don't want to be firing because, obviously, the spent ordnance can come down and kill people. So there was a stipulation that, you know, really you should only fire on them if you feel that they're aggressive and or you're not in an area where you're going to cause civilian casualties.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, you just said that if they don't identify themselves on radio.
Yeah.
Now, are you talking in terms of the UFOs identifying themselves? And if so, are you insinuating that this had, that they had done this in the past, that they had identified themselves?
Apparently so. Apparently so. And this is all outlined in a book, a new book. Well, it's a second edition of a book by a guy named Frank Fischino Jr. And it's called Shoot Them Down, Flying Saucer Wars of 1952.
All right. So that leads to another question. All right. Now, presuming that they made radio contact,
yep,
then wouldn't that insinuate, I mean, to me, it just seems obvious, that there would be more than one group. One group wouldn't want to communicate with these folks, and the other group, of course, wanting to be on good terms, they wouldn't communicate. Does that seem reasonable to you?
Yes, and clearly the military understood this at some point, too, that there was hostiles and then there was friendlies. Further, what they found out was that the hostiles and the friendlies were firing on each other. In other words, there was aerial dog battles between the UFOs going on, and this was also documented. However, here's the sad point. We lost at least 1,700 or more jets and pilots from 1952 to 1956.
All right.
It didn't stop there. I mean, it apparently we kept trying to intercept or deter them to some degree, and this is also mentioned in another book by another new book by the British author Timothy Good. The book is called Need to Know, and he talks about the secret saucer wars. And recently, when he talked about this book, someone asked him, "Hey, look, we don't have the technology to shoot these things down, so how come they're crashing like that?" And he says, The person said, "Is it possible that they're fighting amongst each other over something?" And Timothy Good said, "Yes, that's exactly what it is. Our technology up until recently was nothing compared, and it probably still is, even the back-engineered stuff that we have covertly, is no match for these guys that are, you know, that built the stuff originally and have been operating it for thousands of years."
Well, yeah, of course. You wouldn't have access to repair parts, for sure.
No, and the other thing is, you got to wonder why they keep coming down here. If it's such a hostile territory, why would you keep showing up repeatedly knowing that you're going to be shot at, not only by us, but your potential adversary? There's something very important here, and I think we're it.
You think that we're it?
I think human beings are the prize. I don't think it's just water, although they've been seen snatching up large volumes of water and transporting them to God knows where. Seems to me that we're the prize.
Well, I would imagine if they're doing mining on the moon, some of the pieces of information, I think you've sent me some, and other folks have sent some to me as well. I mean, that's one of the things that would be a commodity on a world like that, on a planetoid like the moon. There wouldn't be any water, and if there's that many people, they're going to need quite a bit of it.
I suppose. It seems to me, from what I've looked at, that whatever bases are that may be on the moon would have to be underground. And there's no telling what kind of resources that they've cultivated in there in a closed environment. And the same would hold true for Mars.
Now, I'm sure some of our listeners, as well as you and I, have noticed that if you go out and take a look at the moon when it's dark, on a clear night, it looks like there's an atmosphere around it.
Yeah, that's a reflection of the ancient ruins. And I really have no idea how old they are, but I would just have to assume that they're ancient. As Hoagland and others have pointed out, these look like glass domes.
Uh-huh.
And I recently went through the NASA Apollo archives and was looking at it, and I was astonished. Even, you know, I mean, as much as I know about this, I was astonished at what you can see by downloading some of these pictures and just playing with the contrast and the brightness. Suddenly, all kinds of things pop up in the so-called darkness of the sky. You know, the things that look like faint stars, when you actually play with the picture And you're not really enhancing it. You're just changing the contrast brightness. In other words, you're filtering out some of the noise. Suddenly the signals come up, popping out of there, and my God, it's just unbelievable.
Well, where I was going with that is if they're taking water off this planet,
yes,
and taking it to the moon, they must be out venting it. And if they're venting it out, then it might show up as an atmosphere around the moon.
You know, people have debated this for a long time, whether there's any clouds up there or not. I'm sure that there must be some atmosphere. Clearly, there is on Mars, and it's not red, it's blue. You know, the Hubble telescope has shown us pictures that prove that. But
yeah, I've seen that.
But NASA's been covering up, I mean, I should say the elite, the secrets, the members of secret societies that have infiltrated NASA and basically pulled the strings there, they've been covering up all of this for decades, and they're not about to suddenly release it anytime soon.
No, I don't suppose they would. Well, it would be counterproductive. You know,
yeah.
One of the things that I recall where this would be counterproductive is if you just take a look at the, what's that movie that was out where the UFO comes down and blasts everybody on top of the skyscraper?
Yeah, that was Independence Day?
Independence Day, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if we were to find out that actually the people who are pulling the strings, the puppet masters, as it were, mm-hmm. if they were to be found out to be actually controlling this world, well, that'd raise all kinds of problems, all kinds of questions.
Yeah, yeah, I know. They don't want that, obviously. They do not want to be held accountable for their actions or their misdeeds, and there are many, 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 many. And I think that's why a lot of people turn a blind eye to this. I know you were asking before, how come such apathy? It's basically fear. And I don't blame people for being scared, because what the heck are they supposed to do, really? You know, I mean, especially as an individual, one person has very little influence over what's going on here. I mean, we're talking about a very well-organized secret cabal that's global, with connections that go off this planet to some very, nefarious extraterrestrials.
Well,
I know you and I've talked about this privately, Jerry, but I find it fascinating. When you first told me that your opinion about what was going on here, that we were basically part of a larger empire that was being controlled from a distance,
mm-hmm.
I listened, but I just, you know, I found it hard to believe because I just didn't have any, well, I didn't have much of a reference. But over the years, knowing what you said, I've actually compared what you said to the other information, and I found it to be extremely accurate. I wish it wasn't that. I really wish that we were not in this current situation. Okay, but I do think it's time for people to start waking up. And even if it's scary, you know, it's better that you face your fears and move forward.
Well, I have to agree with you there. The trouble is, let's just take a look the people that are in a position of management and authority,
yeah.
in the government, in NASA. Now, we all know that during the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, I even experienced this in the 70s and 80s, the notorious Men in Black would show up, and
yeah.
some people actually died as a result of their appearance.
Yeah,
I was cornered by these guys on two different occasions. One, when I had photos of a UFO that came down in a farm field behind our house in Kentucky. And again, when I was going on a radio program. And they showed up at a few lectures.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that kind of intimidation taken to, let's say, four steps above, and you take a look at people who have mysteriously died, who have mysteriously disappeared, who have mysteriously met their end,
mm-hmm.
and it's not hard to imagine that what may be going on in these upper echelons of management and direction, these folks could be wielding a great deal of power and influence and threats. So the people that are giving us the information are giving us the information they're told to give us. and we're looking at them like they're the bad guys. Maybe they're not. Maybe they're just doing what they need to do in order to stay safe.
Yes, I agree. It's very dangerous to go against this particular, the elite, I guess, the people that, like you call them, the puppet masters, our overlords, as they were, you know, but what is the alternative? We continue to live like cattle or sheep? I mean, I don't know. Honestly, I'm not encouraging people to just do something that's going to get them in trouble or worse. But at the same time, I think that we should resist whenever possible, wherever possible, the lies, and to expose them whenever possible. Look, you know, I mean, for people that don't know me, I've been doing this for some time. That's how I met Jerry, was through Unicus magazine when I was, we were really going full swing there. It's just, you know, but this thing with Washington, D.C., obviously there's something huge going on there that they've been covering up for decades, and I sort of fell into it one day with these photographs, and as I started to dig deeper, I realized that UFOs had shown up there not a few times, but actually over 200 times in the past 150-something years. And if you want to see some of those photos, if you haven't seen those authentic photographs, I suggest you guys go to unicusmagazine.com. It's spelled UNICUS magazine.com, and click on the picture of the book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, and suspend your skepticism for just a minute and really look at all the photographs, because, you know, before 2005, there was only one picture of UFOs over the Washington, D.C. area, specifically the Capitol. The reason that there's only one photograph, folks, is because the rest of them, and there were hundreds, taken in 1952 alone. There was hundreds of still pictures and obviously quite a few movies that were taken as well, which I've got a copy of one of those movies on my website. But the reason that we couldn't see those is because they were all confiscated by the military, then classified, and they were hidden away from the light of day. In other words, they literally took the truth away from us, the true history of what's going on as far as UFOs in D.C. The military was involved in the cover-up. I cite that in my book from a retired Air Force colonel, which I, you know, and I'm not really happy about this, but here's the bottom line. When I published the book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, even when I published the first article internationally in July of 2005, I was visited by an unmarked black helicopter, and the harassment escalated from there. So, and at one point I really thought about giving up, but then I realized, you know, I haven't done anything wrong. I am not a terrorist. I'm simply an American citizen exercising my First Amendment, my freedom of speech. And, you know, until such time that they suspend that, my rights, I'm going to continue to exercise them, because I think everybody has a right to know what is really going on in Washington, D.C.
I remember getting the phone call from you when that black helicopter buzzed your place. It did have you kind of freaked out. I know it would have been intimidating for me as well. Did it just hang over your house for a while?
It didn't just hover. It was actually doing orbiting around the house very low, under 300 feet. When I first came out of the house to see what the hell was going on, it was literally hovering over my driveway, which is totally illegal. You can't do that, folks. I mean, and this was clearly not a regular military operation. It was what they call paramilitary, like Blackwater or Wackenhut. It was a contract job, and that the only purpose was really to, because they know where I live and they know what I'm doing, obviously. It's very easy. I mean, I'm not hiding anything. But it was meant to intimidate me, to try and get me to stop, to back off, because I'd obviously touched a nerve. I didn't intentionally set out to upset anybody. I just want to tell the story as I found it. And I was astonished to find that UFOs are drawn to Washington, D.C. like moths to a flame. And yet, the mainstream media refuses to cover this story. And even some of the UFO researchers have told me flat out, you know, you're mistaken. You've exaggerated. You've actually created some of these things, haven't you? And in fact, accusing me of screwing things up for the legitimate researchers, which I find almost laughable. But it's a little bit hurtful, too, because, you know, I have spent, since spring of 2005, I've been on this story, and even though I published the original first edition in October of 2006, I'm still working on the next edition because there's so much more information that keeps coming forward, stuff that it just defies imagination. It's almost too much to believe that this could be going on, that these events and UFO events such as them landing on the Capitol could happen and be completely ignored by almost everybody, including professional UFO researchers.
Now, haven't there been people since your book came out that have come to you and provided more information?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, some of them do not want their names mentioned at all because they're prominent individuals with professions right there. That one of this one gentleman, I won't say his name, but I'm not going to say what he does, but his daughter read about my book in the local newspaper here in Los Angeles. She called me up and came over to the house. We talked for a while, very cordial. She took the book back to her mom because she said her mom was interested. I found out later, actually, her father was having close encounters right there in the home where they live in D.C. And this didn't happen just once. It happened more than once. And it really blew his mind. I mean, this gentleman was absolutely freaked out by it. He wasn't scared. He was just, it expanded his mind so quickly, it was like his world was sort of collapsing on him. He didn't know what to make of reality anymore because this just wasn't part of it up until the time they started showing up. And you know, he said through channels to me was that they communicate quite clearly with some sort of mental, they have a mental ability to communicate at a distance. Because he found himself, you know, like anybody would do. If you see a UFO outside your window, you start wondering internally in your mind, what the hell is that? And when, or who is that? They say, who is that? And they say, or what do you want? What do they want? And then suddenly another voice pops in your head and says, what do we want? You know, it's enough to freak anybody out. You know, I mean, it would absolutely freak them out. The other thing is, the average person that works, who has a position of authority in D.C., probably knows nothing about what's going on. Probably, unless they're involved with one of the secret societies there, they're not going to really know what's going on. So they do not want to be burdened with the responsibility of this. I mean, because I asked quite a few people if they would come on the record, and they said no way, because they know that once, the way they explain it to me is if they even step one foot into that arena and say, yes, it's real, then they will be held publicly accountable for everything that has happened in the past and everything that happens in the future. It's too much of a burden for one person to really, you know, even shoulder at any official capacity. So that's the other thing. Not only is there this systematic, very well orchestrated conspiracy of silence, there's also just the total intimidation factor of this problem, which is really complex. So, anyway, it's you know. Oh, here's my other point. Before July of 2005, there was only one picture, only one. Now, suddenly, when I was contacted by the photographer, he had a host of pictures that he had taken. Well, then I went and I started searching everywhere. I mean, literally for, you know, like I said, for since spring of 2005, I've been scouring the internet for pictures of UFOs over Washington D.C. and getting very minimal results up until a point. Suddenly the dam broke, and now you can go to my website and click on the free images there, and you'll see a host of things that you've never seen before about specifically that movie. The movie, which I believe is still classified, is a copy that someone at a British television station found in an archive. They ran it through the projector, and while they were doing that, somebody had a camera, a digital movie camera, and they copied it that way, and they walked out of that archive with that particular piece of footage in a digital format. They then proceeded to air it on October of 2005, Channel 4, which is in England. It's an affiliate of Oxford TV and Film, which is also an associate of A&E, which is History Channel. They aired it in England in a program called UFOs, The Secret Evidence. It was narrated by Nick Cook, who I happen to know. And when I saw the footage, when it aired here in 2006, I was floored. I'd never seen it before. I contacted Nick. He said he wasn't sure where they had procured that particular footage. When I pressed him on it later, he said, oh, that's computer-generated. Well, okay, everything else in that documentary was, but that one cannot be. It simply cannot be because we've analyzed it frame by frame. and you can literally see it's not only being shown through a projector. You know, the old school frame by frame, you could, it makes a pulsing kind of as the each frame progresses at whatever speed. You literally get a flickering effect of the film.
Of course.
That's clearly visible. You can also see scratches and mold, and also like a fading of the film. And moreover, when you really look close into it, now that we've got computer-enhanced technology, you can look at the frames. You can literally see the light of the UFOs as they pass behind the Capitol. It's bending around the rotunda, which is the Capitol dome.
Right. Yeah, okay, I think I've seen that, and I know exactly what you're talking about. That's astonishing.
Tell me about it, because a lot of people, including myself, were thrown off at first when we were getting these reports back. In fact, like I said, a lot of people in the media, when I showed it to them, they said, "Oh, that's computer generated," without doing any analysis and all. That it's a knee-jerk reaction. It's either got to be Photoshop or it's computer generated. In other words, nothing can be real. No UFO photos over DC are real. Even in fact, the original one from that, like I said, the very old yellow still photograph of the UFOs passing behind the Capitol. It was clearly taken on the same night that the movie footage was taken, and I'm not even sure which night it is. That for some reason, when they Channel 4 did it, they put a different date on there, a date that doesn't correspond to any known historic UFO sightings over D.C., so they got that wrong, but at least they leaked the film. And it could have been a number of different archives that they got it from, but I can tell you this, that was done intentionally. Here's why, I know this. 10 years earlier, 1995, Walt Disney Studios, again heavily involved with secret societies, they aired a documentary only to select cities in the United States. It didn't broadcast nationally like they could have easily done it. It wasn't even listed in the TV guide. It just aired suddenly in select cities around the United States. And what it showed in there, among other things, it was narrated by Michael Eisner and actually it was mainly Robert Urich, but Michael Eisner made a very long monologue in there about UFOs and that they even passed over the Capitol. And look, here's the footage. They actually showed a few seconds of another movie that was taken July 1952 at night, showing these UFOs buzzing around the Capitol. So most everybody in this field knew, including myself, knew that UFOs had been over D.C. at least three times in 1952. However, when I did research for the book, I found out they showed up 22 times that year. 22 times, not two or three. There's a huge disparity there.
That particular year, 22 times.
22 times, okay? And you should also know that in the first time that the military officially attempted to intercept a UFO over Washington, D.C. was 1948. So by the time 1952 came around, they were well aware of what was going on. The UFOs had repeatedly visited that area and were actually wreaking havoc. As far as the military was concerned, they were prepared for an invasion. They literally had guys on the ground that were prepared for an all-out invasion.
All right. Well, one question that comes to mind is that date on the footage that you said didn't correspond with the date of the sighting. Mm-hmm. Would it have been any one of the other 21 occasions?
It could have been, but like I said, it correlates perfectly. You can see that you can match up the still photograph, the only photograph that we had up until July of 2005.
I see.
You see what I mean? So, and that was attributed to the date of July 26th. That was the night that we lost at least one of our military jets during an intercept or attempted intercept of these UFOs. And they were toying with our jets. We know this from the historic records of the radar operators and the people, the civilian ground observers corps. They could see clearly what was going on. The UFOs would loiter in the area for hours. When we tried to intercept, so we'd send up a jet. The UFOs would literally disappear visually and off the radar. The jets would return back to base, and then the UFOs would reappear. So it was like, more or less, they didn't want a direct confrontation. But they weren't going to leave the area either. They were making a show of force.
They obviously were not the ones who were in radio contact.
We don't know that. And if they were not overtly hostile at that point, I'm going to go out on a limb here and assume that the good guys were just adamant about making something known to our military and whoever really runs the show here?
Well, it sounds reasonable to me, because if they were going to be hostile, I'm sure they would have done some hostile act.
Well, but they did. Whether they did it or somebody did it, because on September 12th of 1952, we lost another jet, and this time it was being followed by military radar as usual. Actually, it was three different military bases down off of Florida were tracking this F-94 Sabre jet. Oh no, excuse me, Starfire. They were called Starfire. Anyway, the two pilots on board were vanished with the jet, were never recovered. They were later sort of expunged from the military records, like they never existed. But the author, Mr. Festino Jr. there in Florida, he was very persistent, and with the help of Stanton Friedman, they actually verified these guys did exist, and that they were basically deleted from the military files because the military did not want to explain what had happened to these gentlemen. There was no trace of them whatsoever. They literally vanished. Now, why is that important? Is because September 12th, that we know for sure that UFOs were being shot at by us, but they seemed to be fighting with one another. And during that time, there was at least four UFOs that were partially disabled that came down over the United States. Two of them were over the eastern seaboard. One of them actually passed directly over the Capitol, and it was in flames, or appeared to be in flaming, with smoke trailing behind it. And it was reported in the newspaper as a meteor. It clearly wasn't. Meteors don't go that slowly in the atmosphere. They don't make 90-degree angle turns, and they sure as hell don't land near a farm in Virginia. When it did land, a being got out. It actually got out in an exoskeletal suit. It was called the Flatwoods Monster later by people who tried to describe what they were seeing, but they'd never seen anything like this before, Jerry. And so, again, Mr. Festino is the guy that really broke the story on this, and what he found was, through a careful analysis, I mean, just like he was investigating a crime scene, and he's a very good illustrator, so the illustrations that he made are probably the finest on this subject. But basically, what we're talking about here is a 9 to 10 foot tall reptilian in an exoskeletal suit. The craft had been damaged, but it somehow was repaired enough, at least, for that particular being to leave. There was another reptilian that was found in a different location that it expired from its wounds. So, anyway, the whole thing is, I mean, there's a lot more going on. I kind of almost understand or can appreciate why the military wouldn't want to tell people this, because, honestly, I think a lot of people would panic if this were the case. However, they couldn't panic for long because, you know what, you can't go anywhere. You cannot get off this world. And, I mean, where can you hide from something that is obviously a global phenomenon? You can't, unless you want to go into a cave.
Let's take that thought and hold it for a second.
Okay.
Folks, you're listening to me, Jerry Wills, on Channel U. Our guest tonight is Robert Stanley, the editor of Unicus Magazine, and has written a book. Tell us the name of your book, Robert.
Close Encounters on Capitol Hill.
Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. We have a toll-free number if you'd like to call in. The number is 877-876-5227. We've got about 20 minutes more in this show. If you want to call, you better do it now. Seth, if you're listening, let me know if there's a caller.
You know, Jerry, there's one thing I'd like to explain to people. I, because I've had interference in my life surrounding the book, I decided not to release it to bookstores. So if people are interested, the only place you can get it is through my website, which is unicusmagazine.com. It's UNICUS magazine.com. And I'm working on making an electronic version available to people. So if you're interested, just send me an email. There's a link on the website there to my email. I get it directly. But I should have that electronic book version up pretty soon here.
All right. I think we may have a caller. Do we have a caller, Seth?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. I can hear you fine.
Good. I just had a couple.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from. My name's Jim. I'm calling from Florida.
All right.
Just a couple quick comments. I heard an interview on Coast to Coast with George Norrie interviewing Stuart Shredlow, and he was talking, I found it interesting, he was talking about a staged alien invasion as an excuse to you know, how they always want a war on something, and the war on terrorism will run out, and then they stage this alien invasion as a way to bring in a new world government, a new world order type thing. So they may be working on doing something like that, and also staging the second coming. Apparently they can put up these holograms, beam them up, make them look like whatever they want. So that would put everyone into massive fear and panic to forward their agenda to whatever. So he was in the Montauk Project and stuff like that. So I found that interview very interesting. And my last comment was Sean David Morton would always comment on how these UFOs would show up at these strange times and would like almost suck up this uranium from these dangerous situations, averting these, you know, potential wars and stuff. So, you know, I guess it's just good and evil doing different things. I mean, maybe some of these things have stopped, you know, third world wars or something. Maybe some of it is good. I don't know, but it's just so weird, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, there's just so much going on out there. And we get reports, and I'm sure you do too, Robert, of all kinds of things that are going on. And
it's nothing new. And you know, I've heard this, actually, that story of them creating a false extraterrestrial invasion is a bit funny. I mean, I know where it came from. It was a particular woman who claimed she worked with Wernher von Braun, and that he had confided in her that was what was the real agenda. And I don't put it above the elite to create all kinds of scenarios. It's the old Hegelian doctrine, basically. You know, you get people looking left, you get people, other people looking right, extreme right. You take them right down the middle, and they don't even know where they're headed half the time. But as far as you know, faking an extraterrestrial invasion, sorry, but you don't need to fake that. It's been going on for a long time. In fact, you know, I really stuck my neck out last year, and I'm going to continue saying this because I think it's right, that we're actually part of a larger galactic empire, and that the good guys are locked out. That it's the bad guys that are running the show here, covertly, and that the only reason there's a battle going on is because the good guys are desperately trying to get in here whenever and wherever they can to try and help some of us be liberated.
Jim, are you still there?
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for commenting on that. I'll let you go. Also, it seems like Sean David Morton kind of said all these, you know, all these crafts are showing up at this point, kind of getting a ringside seat, see if we're going to graduate. You know what we're going through these times. So it's all, you know, it's all coming to a head, I guess. So thank you very much.
All right, take
care. Thank you for calling, Jim.
Yeah, I know Sean. He lives out here in very close to where I am. We once upon a time we worked at the same psychic hotline. Yes, I admit it. I was one of those people.
What's my future, Robert? Come
on. Yeah, right.
Tune in.
Stay tuned.
I have not seen Sean in quite a while.
Yeah, but quite a character.
He show up at some of the places that I was lecturing. And we became cordial friends. He's a nice fella.
Yeah.
I have a lot of respect for him. You know, and some of the things he's had to say are just as wacky as some of the things I've had to say. So.
Yeah, well, I think the only criticism I'd have of Sean is that he takes credit for a lot of other people's information. He doesn't like to say where it comes from. He tends to offer it up as though it's his own insight, when in fact he's got a lot of friends that are very well connected in Hollywood and elsewhere, and including Roger Clinton. So he definitely knows people that are on the inside, and that's where he gets a lot of his insights from, as far as I know. But he's been very nice to me over the years, so I don't want to say anything too much about him. What he really likes about me is the fact that I found, you know, inadvertently I found, as you know, the ancient ruins of some kind of city up there in Malibu where I grew up. And, you know, that's on my website, too, if you're interested. I've got photographs and a brief explanation of how I found it and what I think is going on there. But it's another one of those things, honestly, I'm not sure what the direct connection is between UFOs, ETs, and lost civilizations, but here's the bottom line. We really don't know what our true history is. I can tell you that with a certainty. we've been divorced from our past, and I think that was done deliberately to control us more easily.
Robert, one of the things that occurs to me was during some of my conversations with Randy Winters about the Billy Meyer contacts, and one of the things Randy showed me was something called the Talmud.
Talmud of Emmanuel. Yeah, sure, I read that.
Okay.
James Dierdorf, I think it was James Dierdorf that published it. I knew Randy when he was going around, and even before that, I had read all of Billy's so-called contact notes, and found it very fascinating. You know, the bottom line is, if you can believe what Billy has said, or what the Pleiarians supposedly told him, Pleiarians, whatever you want to call them, our ancestors were bloodthirsty warriors from Lyra, and they obviously had conquest on their mind. And that was their reason for being. So they built empires, you know, big deal. They blew up they blew up an entire solar system in the process in I think it was Lyra. But regardless, you know, that's what they do, and it made some sense to me, you know. But he also talked about the Giza intelligence, which I found fascinating because I've been to the Giza plain. I actually got to go in the Great Pyramid and experience an initiation there when I was a teenager. And that may explain why I'm so different. But, there's something definitely, there's a huge complex underneath the Giza Plain, and he claimed that there was these negative human extraterrestrials that were there manipulating people's minds remotely and doing all kinds of nefarious things. So, I accept that to some degree. It's impossible to verify, but...
One of the things that I remember is that they apparently were able to go back in time, and they took Billy Meyer.
Yes.
Took him back in time. They had accidentally whacked into this tree, and they had to do something different to save the tree.
Right.
And they also showed him something about going back in time, and I don't remember when the age was. It seemed like it was in the age of Jesus, but I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
The point here is this. These ancient cities... you and I both are interested in this, and so are a lot of people listening.
Yeah.
It's a big enigma, because there's obviously some tremendous technology that was involved in this. I mean, my God, there's some blocks of stone that you cannot even move. There's nothing made today that you can move it with.
Nope.
Now, if they can go back and forth through time, then, maybe this is remnants of where they were living.
It's quite possible, and I mean, even this is the thing about secret societies. They see America as the new Atlantis, and apparently, from what I've learned, Atlantis did have a direct and open discourse with extraterrestrials from wherever they came from, other planets, other dimensions. It's not important. The fact is, they were here, they were interacting with us. I'm not sure at that point that we deified them. In other words, put it another way, we didn't worship them back then. We were more or less partners with them to some degree?
Depends upon the age, I think. I mean, there was an age when we did, and an age when we didn't, and an age when we probably weren't sure, and then our age where we just really don't know.
Well, and again, that was done deliberately. Although, the cataclysmic events that have occurred on this world is enough to erase anybody's memory. I mean, even, down to a DNA level, because everything got so scrambled. We know there's been mass extinctions more than once on this planet, and that would include humans. It's almost a miracle that we're here. In fact, I think somebody's been deliberately reseeding the garden, as it were, more than once. And the reason I feel that way is because we know from just looking at the galactic cosmology that galaxies collide, and they collide frequently. They merge, actually, is a more better term. It's not like they run smack into each other. They do this weird little dance where they sort of orbit each other, and then they merge. And, yeah, there's a lot of destruction and upheaval in the process, but this is a process, okay? We don't know what set this in motion. All I know is it must serve a function or it wouldn't be happening. So the bottom line is we definitely are living in a very unstable solar system. I know that's an uncomfortable thought, but the truth of the matter is we're all transient beings anyway. I mean, in this physical form, we know that we're here for a very, very short time and that we will transit to another level of being. Maybe it'll be physical. Maybe it won't. It depends. I think it depends on a person's intention and will. But, you know, anyway, the bottom line is there's been this whole solar system. That's the underlying message from these ancient ruins, not only on this world, but on the moon and Mars, is clearly that there's been a tremendous cataclysm that wreaked havoc on the entire solar system and devastated whatever civilizations were here.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people want to push it way, way, way back, you know, like impossible, like hundreds of thousands of years, or if not millions of years ago. It's been happening, and that's the message I get. Whenever I go to the ruins that I found, I'm overwhelmed by the fact that this was not that long ago, relatively speaking. It happened just yesterday. It reminds me of that movie Planet of the Apes when he comes up and upon the statue of the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "My God, you know, you bastards." He was a little upset by the fact that we had intentionally destroyed our own civilization, but sometimes nature just does that for us. And
Robert, I think we have a caller.
Okay, good.
You.
Hi.
Hi.
What's your name and where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Tennessee, Smoky Mountains of Tennessee.
Hey.
I'm really enjoying the show tonight, and I just wanted you to know that truthfully, you said, you know, for the last year, but you were going to go ahead and say it.
Yeah.
To that last caller,
uh-huh.
You're absolutely spot on, dear. We are part of a much bigger galactic story,
mm-hmm.
And there is literally a battle for this whole planet.
Now, tell me how you know that. That's all right. You can speak openly. No one's listening.
Well, yeah, nobody's listening, right. Let's just say that... I'm kind of an off-worlder.
All right.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. But I will say this, you're on the right track. And definitely when you have black helicopters show up, you're definitely on the right track. Because they, for God's sake, don't want this out to the public.
Yep.
And all of your ruling elites are all part of the reptilian bloodline, including myself. And the Pajarans were actually part of the Anunnaki, the reptilians, whatever you want to call us, that came down here. And, you know, according to Zachariah Sitchin, with the Sumerian tablets and all that, and we created mankind to, you know, do these mining the gold and all that. And, you know, the story is right now that Nimbaru, Planet X, Bible calls it Wormwood, whatever, it's on its way back through its 3,600-year cycle, and that the planet Nimbaru that has the Anunnaki on it are going to be, and they have a way station at Mars, you know, the face of Mars.
Yeah.
Old ancient runes. Well, are they really all that ancient? I mean... there's also stories that, you know, we have a black ops situation where we have bases on the moon, we have bases on Mars. But I hear they've been overran by some very nasty, should we say, ETs out there that are... It's a total battle going on out there that, you know, we think it's thunder and rumbling and lightning in the skies at night. And you just kind of diss it off. No, these are actually battles going on out there.
Well, I hope it's not every night, but I know you're right about that to some degree.
Yeah, well, it's not every night, of course not. I'm sure at some point, somewhere on the planet, that people are seeing these things.
Yeah. Well,
and, you know, we're just, you know, you're a conspiracy kook, you're a nut if you say anything.
Yeah.
Trying to think of the gentleman's name. Samford Amontok. Have you heard of him or done any reading of his stuff?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Very interesting man. He talks about the two factions here on the planet. He calls them the Vulturites, and I forget what the other ones are. But these are the two different sects of this ET
right.
group that's fighting for control of this planet.
You know,
and humanity is kind of caught in the crossfires.
Yes, we are. We are. And there's another good book that you can pick up called ETs and Aliens by Dr. Noel Huntley. He's in England, and he's done a very good job at in fact, I think I sent you that book, Jerry. It sort of outlines, it's like a... like a brochure when you go to an event, you know, you learn about both teams and what their goals and agendas are, and it's laid out quite clearly. But you know, I honestly wish it wasn't so. I'd like to go back to living in ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
So I'm a very unhappy person.
I want to thank you for calling from Tennessee. Listen, we're running right up at the top of the hour here. We're going to have to sign off here in a couple of minutes. I'm really astonished by the level of information. We've only scratched the surface. Let's do this again, Robert. How about if we do another?
Hey, I'd love to, Jerry. Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
And wish you all the best, and keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate you being here, Robert.
My pleasure.
Listeners, go to expeditionstv.com if you're interested in... ancient stuff, kinds of stuff. Go to expeditionstv.com. It's spelled an X. You need to reach us at our award-winning non-studio, because we're on the road. It's expeditions@mac.com. Or you can go to jerrywills.com, JerryWills.com. Next week, we're going to have another guest. We're going to be talking about healing and all sorts of things. So until then, thank you so much, Robert.
Oh, my pleasure, Jerry. Take care.
All right. Good night, everyone. I'm Jerry Wills, and I'm out of here. Goodbye for now.
Listening to Channel U. Sure, she's crazy. Sometimes she feels